FM to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
6:04 on the score. You got Molly and Haley. Thanks for being with us. Bundle up if you're heading outside because it is a cold one. Sub-zero wind chills and right around zero when we were heading in this morning. And Hub Arc is sitting in for Molly today. Molly taking a few days off around the holiday, so we're glad Hub is able to sit in with us. And we love your calls. 312-644-6767 is our number. When you look at Mitch Trubisky, and we were talking about a little bit at the 5 and 5 Hub, and talking about the relationship between Dal Loggins and the young quarterback and the generational thing and Dal being closer to his age, but not really, compared to the 63-year-old John Fox. Mm-hmm. How much do they talk to Trubisky about when they make this move? About do they even address, is that even a possibility where Ryan Pace sits down with Trubisky and says, you know, here's my ideal, here's what I hope to get with a new head coach? Or because he's a rookie, no matter how high you drafted him and how much you have invested in him, you treat him just like any other player. He doesn't have any kind of input into what you're looking for in a play caller or a head coach.
No, I can't imagine that you get him involved in any kind of process. And furthermore, I don't think you discuss this with him until Sunday night or Monday morning. Now, you do. He's going to be the leader of your football
right.
team. He was brought in to build around. So you do sit down with him.
And you see him doing that not only in the huddle, but you see him on the sideline and by all accounts in the locker room.
You hear his teammates talk about what a good leader he is.
Right.
So you definitely, if you're Ryan Pace, you sit down with him on Monday and you explain to him, this is what we had to do. This is what we're going to do. Go heal up, relax for a little while. I'll let you know as soon as we got our guy. But no, you don't involve a 22-year-old rookie in a head coaching search. You just don't do that.
Yeah. And again, you'll be on the air as you usually and weekly are with the pre and post game. So if anything happens with an official announcement from the Chicago Bears immediately following the Bears wrap up against Minnesota, you'll hear it here first on the score. Hub, of course, will be joined by Patrick Manley and Olin Krutz and Big Cat in the post game. You'll be out at 85 Executive Drive in Aurora. Come on out and see the guys. Great broadcast. You're going to have score prizes out there and a lot of great conversation. And you say it won't happen until the plane touches down at the minimum. You don't want that uncomfortable plane ride, charter ride from Minnesota. But everyone's going to be waiting for – no one's going to be asking John Fox about a challenge in the Minnesota game. They'll be asking bigger picture questions as they have been.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the post game is going to be uncomfortable for everybody. And they're probably going to lose. Maybe they win, but I don't. Actually, they're early because if Carolina wins, the Vikings still need to win to get a bye. So It's not like the Vikings have nothing to play for. So, you know, you're probably looking at a typical last week of the season where you're playing a very superior team and you took your lumps. And the whole, I think the post game is going to be very short. The one possibility here, Fox and Jay Glazer are very close, and Jay's a friend and a great reporter, and nothing negative about this. You know, we'd all like to have these kind of relationships. But almost everything that we've heard over the years, the 28 years about John Fox, or I don't know how long Jay's been doing it over at Fox, Fox Sports, that is.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if Jay has something during the day on Sunday. And if he does, that's going to tell me that Fox is not ready to retire, okay? Because it is very important to these coaches, not just John Fox, but the other, you know, at least five, maybe six, seven, eight who are going to get fired Sunday or Monday, depending on whether they're looking to keep working or not, is you want this positioned properly. And that's all about what was happening in Denver. You know, we were sold this story that John and John Elway, it was a mutual decision to part ways.
No, he was.
That's
he
not
was,
true.
He was
fired.
Door. Yeah,
you know?
Right.
But because of Foxy's relationship with Jay and a few other people in the media, he did a great job of positioning it. You know, and that it was a mutual misunderstanding. And so, you know, I don't know what Fox is thinking. If I was him, I'd be ready for a year or two off. But I'm not him. You know, so I don't know.
But that's the other thing. When you come off not only a 6-win season, a 3-win season, and whatever it happens to be by the time you're done, it's all said and done in Minnesota. How do you sell that? How do you even get an interview, let alone how do you, you know, here's John Fox, our new head coach. You know, we were talking about this at the end of last week. It's great to hear Jeff Fisher, you know, say again, he'd like to get back into it and he'd be interested in the Bears job. How, you know, when you're talking about a young quarterback, and by the way, you know, Goff became a quarterback after Fisher was shown the door. How do you win that press conference or even begin to even have that thought process? You know, whether it's Jeff Fisher or certainly John Fox, it's great to say I want to stay in the game, I want to do this, But given the kind of the new age NFL where it's all about offense and it's all about the next Sean McVay and the younger, better, more imaginative mind. I mean, it's great to see John Fox thinks he's a young 63 or whatever. How do you even get an interview, let alone get a job?
You know, I think the Fish report was really strange because it targeted the Bears and the Browns. Gruden targeted the Bucks. That's the cardinal sin in coaching. You never talk about a job that one of your fellow coaches still has. You can talk about an open job. And that's why I don't know if anybody said they were quoting Fisher as that report got out there. But the answer to your question, Brian, is that the egos on these guys are enormous. And all, Fisher is thinking is I've been a head coach in the NFL for 21 years. I'm an experienced guy. I did a good job in two other places. It was stunning that Jeff kept his job in Tennessee as long as he did.
Right.
And I'm surprised he didn't get let go a year or two earlier by the Rams. Foxy's a little different because he had two organizations he took to Super Bowls. I think he left a couple games over 500 in Carolina, but a fantastic record in Denver. He was, 43-14 or something like that. And so, he can sell himself in the right spot if that's what he wants. And I don't think it's going to happen right out of the box. The Bears made that mistake. They hired him 24 hours out of Denver. He's not going to be a head coach somewhere in the NFL in 2018. But I wouldn't rule out, depending on how bad he wants it and what he does next, that he did. Guys get third. Wade Phillips, of all guys, has had three head coaching jobs. And now he's a 70-year-old defensive coordinator who's happy at it. Dom Capers had a couple jobs before he ended up in Green Bay for the last however many 10 years. So it happens, but I one of the things we forget is how awful this was when they got here. Phil Emery and Mark Trestman were the laughingstock of the league.
Yeah.
That first year, they did an excellent job. They cleaned out the locker room. They won six games versus five the year before. They got a good year out of this started really strong. And so now you get a little distance from it. You go out there, you start selling the complete package, the Carolina, the Denver, the beginning here. He can make the case. I don't know who's going to hire him, but it could happen.
Does the injury case hold any weight in an interview like that? Otherwise, you're basically pointing the thumb. Or you're not pointing a thumb, you're pointing a finger at the general manager. He didn't give me playmakers. Did you see the roster I had? I mean, what was I supposed to do? How was I supposed to win 8, 9, 10 games with that?
You can't blame it on injuries. But what you could do is make the case that if last year and this year the Bears had just been middle of the pack on injuries, as opposed to because last year they led the league, they were tied for the most guys on IR, and they led the league in starters games lost to injury. This year has been really bad, but now there's other teams. Washington's been worse. There's other teams that have been worse. But you can certainly make the case with any kind of reasonable luck, as opposed to good luck, we would have been better. You can also make the case that it's all Jay Cutler's fault. Now, that's a losing argument to me, okay? But you can point at the quarterback. What'd they start? Five different guys last year? Four different guys last year? It's part of it. But the flip side of that is you can also say there's no way he's 43-14 without Peyton Manning. So,
right.
That one kind of cuts both ways.
Yeah, and when you're interviewing with a GM, you've got to walk a fine line by not trying to blame the previous GM, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see, Mike Glennon got $18 million. I was handed this guy as a starting quarterback, and, a month into it, we knew it wasn't the case to begin with, and we were – he proved it within 4 weeks and all the turnovers. So, it just seems to me that John Fox is, like you said, saying the right things, doing the right things, trying to keep a professional approach because he hasn't determined in his own mind whether he wants to keep doing this. But I think it would be a hard sell for a GM to hire him and put him out in front of everyone and try to sell him after the 3 years here in Chicago.
I've got a few sources, and these are, coaches or GMs with other teams, guys I've talked to over the last couple of years, who've said, not in a negative way, but they've said one of the things that I would evaluate, a lot of times you've done this, Brian, you go to guys to get them to point you in the right direction.
Or to say, here's why I know. Tell me if you've heard completely different
just
to save me from myself.
And so what I've gotten from some of these guys is the idea that take a look at the possibility that what the Bears have gotten has been 96% or 98% of John Fox. Not that he's phoned it in, not that he's stealing money, but that maybe in the third job, knowing that he had some time because they were going to have to rebuild it, that sense of urgency, that fanaticism, that extra 3 hours sleeping on the couch hasn't been there. And that is a possibility, you know, and that will hurt him if, in fact, there's that perception in the GM fraternity. I'm not saying it is, but one or two guys have said you ought to look into that and see what you can figure out.
Bears fans, do you care if John Fox knows and has been told he's fired? Those are the questions that he's fielded yet again yesterday. Does it matter to you, or does the only thing that matter is the who the next coach is? And if Ted Phillips is, in fact, doing some legwork or ground work on the next head coach, does that concern you, even though he is, by the way, the president of the team? 312-644-6767 is our number if you want to join the conversation. This segment of the show brought to us by Burlington. Go back to the basics at your Burlington store. Score the everyday essentials. You need socks. Of course, they have them. Underwear, denim, plus towel sheets, stylish storage, too. Burlington, style for everyone. You got Mully and Haley on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's John Fox, currently the Bears head coach, and things will change Sunday or Monday by all accounts in anticipation. And to talk about the Bears and the NFL, he is the Hall of Famer, Dan Pompey. He joins us on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline. Car ready for winter, and boy, winter is here this morning. See your CarX man. You read him in The Athletic. You hear him here on the score. Usually part of the pregame show right here on the score. Hub will be out there at 85 Executive Drive in Aurora, but Dan's going to be out and about doing some other things this Sunday. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Brian and Hub. Good to be with you guys this morning.
Well, John Fox, if it's another week in the season, it's more questions about, hey, John, do you know you're fired? Has anyone told you you're fired? You know you're fired, right? And said, well, if I knew it, I wouldn't tell you anyway. Probably, certainly, as he said, I believe. Does it matter? Does it matter if they've had that conversation, that whether Ted or Ryan Pace have sat him down and just, you know, spelled it out for him? Because obviously John has been talking for the last 3 weeks as if he knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think you can have that conversation. I mean, I'd be shocked if anyone had the conversation and said you're gone after the season. I think that's something that everyone just kind of goes through the normal work week and pretends like everything's as usual. And then at the end of it, you know, if you're going to make a change, that's when you make the change. But I don't know what benefit it would have to having that discussion prior to the point of actually making the change.
Because it would get out, right? Even if it was a two-man conversation, Ryan and John, eventually that gets out maybe, you know, today, tomorrow, but now you have that distraction going into the final game.
Well, it certainly would, I think, change the team dynamic then, too. You know, you'd have a team that has this hanging over them. I mean, not that it's not kind of hanging over them anyway, but the fact that it has been discussed and is out. I mean, it just would make no sense to me. It'd be like telling your player, your quarterback, yeah, we're not going to re-sign you, but, you know, go out and play for us this weekend. We just, so, you know, I just think that's something that happens after the last game.
You know, it's interesting, Dan. Part of the problem with all this is that we're all kind of guessing at exactly what the relationship between Ryan Pace and John Fox is. I mean, we know they came in together. We know that Ryan Pace had to have a stamp of approval on John Fox, if not the primary, you know, decision point. And we know they've worked together, but we don't know what that working relationship has been like. I mean, you remember there was the awkward moment last year, the day after the first round of the draft, where John Fox said he didn't know it was going to be Trubisky. And you know, I mean, to me, that was kind of a bogus comment because he was on the secret trip to Carolina 3 months earlier to work him out, but this idea of Foxy saying, well, I didn't even know, you know, an hour before the draft that we were taking him. And so, you know, it suggests to me that the way that relationship works is no, of course not. Pace wouldn't tell him before this Sunday.
No. And you know, I think from everything that I've heard, the relationship is pretty good, but with every head coach, general manager relationship, I think, you know, there is some natural push and pull in that relationship, you know, that there can be, I wouldn't say different agendas, but, you know, things that each wants a little differently. I mean, that's normal. And I think it goes on in every building, and there's usually some negotiations, some trying to find middle ground. I mean, the Trubisky decision was interesting. I mean, if John Fox was making the call on the draft, I don't think anyone believes he would have chosen Mitch Trubisky. I think most people believe he would have chosen Solomon Thomas, or you know, or a player who could have come in and ostensibly helped the Bears more this year, helped them more in the short term. And they also maybe would have had extra draft picks that way, or an extra draft pick this year. So, you know, I think it's a normal thing where a general manager and a head coach have some tension. But from what I know, I don't believe the tension is abnormal or more than usual anyway.
Yeah, you mentioned it'd be like telling a quarterback, well, we're not going to resign you, but go get him this week. We're all behind you, champ. Kyle Fuller was basically told, well, he was told they weren't picking up the option on the final year of his rookie contract, and now you're getting Kyle Fuller love all over the newspapers, and certainly people calling in here wondering if this is the player that you move forward with, or 2 years good, 2 years you wondered where Kyle Fuller was. What would you do if you're Ryan Pace? And, the decision is also as much, even more, Kyle Fuller's, but if you wave enough money in his face, you assume that he'd want to stay where he's at, but maybe that's a false assumption.
Yeah, I think it was Hub and I were talking about this on Sunday, and I think Hub came up with the idea, do you maybe put a tag on him? And I thought, that was you who said that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
$14.2 million, give or take.
The ballpark. There's transition tags, franchise tags, but it was 14.3 this year. And the reports are the cap's going to go up about 5 years. Well, of course, that doesn't impact it. What impacts it is the average salary of the top five players, the position, and Stephon Gilmore's contract would drive that up a little bit this year. I'm sorry, Dan.
Yeah, I think, that might not be a bad solution in this whole thing. I would be very wary of making this guy, you know, one of the highest paid cornerbacks in football with a long-term deal, which is what you might have to do to prevent him from going to free agency. I'm pretty sure there'll be a pretty robust market for him, given the scarcity of cornerbacks always, you know, and then his performance this year. Clearly, if the Bears could do it over again, in hindsight, they would not have rescinded that last year of his deal, because that would have been a nice bargain and you would have kept him for another year. But, you know, now the price of poker goes up with Kyle Fuller. And, I still have some questions. I mean, he had a great year. I'd like to see him do it again. He had one great year and he's had three bad years as far as I'm concerned, or maybe two bad year, mediocre years, his rookie year. So I'd like to see him have sustained success. And if he could do it again next year on a franchise tag, maybe then you go ahead and you give him a long-term deal.
I'm a little leery of whether it was a great year, but, you know, relatively speaking, 22 passes defended, most from a Bears cornerback since Donnell Wolford in 1992 when he had 27. So it's kind of like the quarterback position. You forget where that bar should be, and because it looks so good this year, you forget how long it's been since you've seen someone do that at that level for a long, long time here in a Bears uniform.
Right. And you're right. Maybe it wasn't a great year. I mean, he wasn't one of the best cornerbacks in football, but he was very good, I think. And he had a couple lapses, some bad games, But overall, you know, there weren't a lot of cornerbacks in the NFL who played better than him this year. And you just wonder, you know, what happens from here? Is the arrow pointing up with this guy? Was this just the beginning of an ascension where he does become maybe a really elite cornerback? Or might next year, let's say you change the coaching staff and he's not in Vic Fangio's scheme anymore and he doesn't have Ed Donatell developing anymore, does he take a step back? Or does he maybe continue to have some of the injury issues that he had in the previous 2 years? You know, that was as big an issue with him as anything, I think, prior to this year, was just consistent availability. And then that impacted, I think, his development and his, you know, the consistency of being on the field and doing things over and over again. So, these are all fair questions. It's not a cut and dry case with him. You know, it's a little like Alshon Jeffrey last year, you know, where you had all these other factors where you had to consider when you say, should the Bears re-sign him or should they let him go?
We'll let you go, Dan. But quickly, just a quick division question, NFL question. This talk that there are teams pushing the NFL and the commissioner's office to look at the Aaron Rodgers situation up in Green Bay and basically force the Packers to release him if they find them in violation of the injured reserve list. Well, does this have legs, or is this just a story that a couple teams are trying to get going?
Well, I don't know any inside information about it. You know, I haven't made any calls on it or anything, but I would be shocked if it had legs. I can't imagine any scenario in which something like this would happen. I could imagine a scenario in which teams would call the NFL and, cry a river about what the Packers did and demand that they look at this. But, you know, there's never been a scenario like this in league history that I'm familiar of where a team has been forced to let go of a player, let alone the best player in the league. So I can't imagine anything happening.
Well, and the irony, Dan, I can't remember if we talked about this on the air or off the air on Sunday, but the specific complaint is the rule says when a player comes off IR, you cannot put him back on IR unless he has a new injury.
Right.
And nobody has said that Rodgers didn't. The assumption is he didn't. But what's laughable about this is every one of the 31 other teams has done the exact same thing. Players have been stashed on injured reserve for as long as there's been injured reserve. The only reason they're making noise about this is because it's Aaron Rodgers.
Of course, yeah. Right. And I think really, if the rule says, though, that if you violate it, you have to release the player, there's something wrong with the rule, too, because that's too harsh a rule. You need to say if the rule is violated, the team is fined or the team loses a draft pick or something like that, because the crime and punishment are not in line there, I don't think.
Danny, always a pleasure. We'll talk soon. Thanks so much.
Okay, my pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Dan.
Here's Dan Pompey and Hub. You're going to be out and about as you take the show on the road, the pre- and post-game. Going to head out to the Foundry. Great spot. Love going out there. 85 Executive Drive in Aurora. Enjoy the pregame starting at 9 a.m. Post-game, the best one around. Olin Krutz, James Big Cat Williams will be joining you, Hub. And it's a great spot. I mean, great food, great drink. And you know, start your New Year's Eve celebration early. Right after the game, head right from the post game into your full celebration.
You can play the ponies out there too. If you don't like,
that's
if
why
you don't like
I kind of like that spot a lot. Yeah,
I'm feeling that.
We've had remotes out there and stuck around to put a couple bucks down on a horse running at Gulfstream. But yeah, it'll be starting 9 a.m. Come out and join the guys. You have score prizes and a lot of great football conversation. 9 a.m. and of course post game starting immediately after the game. 3 until 5 with Hub and with Olin. And Olin's going to join us, James Big Cat Williams. Olin coming up in just a few minutes on Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That last voice you heard was Scott Boras, and you'll be surprised to hear, shocked, I imagine, that he represents Jake Arrieta, not you, Darvish, but... interesting theory written about yesterday with Gordon Whitmire, our Cubs insider here on the Mully and Hanley Show, and of course, covering the Cubs for the Chicago Sun-Times, wondering in his column why the Cubs don't have a full-court press going on with the man they know, the man who helped them break the 108-year drought and get a World Series here in Chicago, but seemingly they have more interest in pursuing Yu Darvish. And if that, in fact, is the case, is it because they know what the contract demands are and they're not anywhere close to meeting them? That's the assumption and that's been in play for years here, even when he was wearing a Cubs uniform, Hub, that there's nothing to talk about last year. There weren't any real serious conversations ongoing because they knew it was 6 or 7 years and 25 to 30 million. Let's get close to 200 million, call it a day. And so there was really nothing to talk about, even though Theo, the first voice you heard there, was asked time and again, hey, what about, is there any possibility that you get Jake done and get him signed to an extension? Well, Jake's still out there and Darvish is still out there. And Darvish, said there was fake news that he had signed with the Cubs or agreed to the Cubs contract terms, but they seem to have him placed at a higher priority than Jake right now in their pursuit of a starting pitcher.
The only way I think that you can explain that is that Darvish might be more amenable to a shorter deal. Money's going to be the same. I mean, they're in the same ballpark. The one thing that that Jake has that Darvish doesn't is the Cy Young Award. Darvish has actually got 4 All-Star appearances. Jake has only got the 1. I don't know that All-Star appearances should be the measurement. Other than that, their numbers are really stunningly similar. I was a little surprised that Darvish actually has averaged 11 strikeouts per 9 innings over his professional baseball career. Arrieta just 8, but remember, Arrieta got off to a really slow start.
Yeah.
And Darvish has been a star, was a star in Japan, and has started from the time he got over here. It is interesting to me, though, that Darvish has got about 500 more innings on his arm. You wouldn't expect that. And so the only explanation I can come up with is that Darvish's people are at least willing to talk about a shorter term on the deal.
And here we are. I mean, it's December 27th, and I certainly thought both would be signed by now. Not a hint that it's going to happen any time before New Year's Day. And I don't know if it's a game of chicken, and you're waiting for one to sign, and then you know, Scott Boras isn't going to be the first guy to the table letting Arrieta sign, so they're waiting to see what Darvish gets, and they're going to build off that because he can recite his elimination game statistics and tell him he's one of the top 3 pitchers in baseball. But something's got to give here soon because I know it's not the be-all, end-all, but come the weekend of January 13th, 14th, you have Cubs convention. You know, usually you want to get your fan base excited even that much more by introducing the newest, shiniest piece to the added to the team.
Well, not only that, Brian, but, I mean, believe it or not, it's only 3 or 4 weeks after that it's pitchers and catchers in Arizona. And certainly – if you're going to have one of these guys is going to be either the number 1 or number 2 on your staff. I guess Lester is number 1 until he gets replaced. I think Kyle Hendricks is a 2, maybe even a 1 of these days, but he will forever be a 3 apparently in Cubs fans' eyes. And so that's the spot you're trying to fill here. And that guy's got to be in camp the first day with pitchers and catchers. This is not a guy you want to bring in March. So it's going to start, Scott Boras doesn't blink, though. That much we know, and there is still basically 6 solid weeks to get this done, And what intrigues me, maybe I'm missing something. I haven't heard Arrieta's name matched up with any other team in baseball. And I haven't heard anybody else going nuts about Darvish. You're not hearing anything out there. It's not that deals aren't done. It's that nobody's even talking about
these
guys.
Well, and that was the thing.
Guys.
At the winter meetings in particular, that's where you at least hear the conversation, rumors. And that's why Scott Boras held court. And I was like, okay, that was the first time you really heard anything. And it almost sounded like you also heard that he put the 75-page binder together to give not to GMs but to owners to hopscotch the decision makers and go to the guys signing the checks and trying to sell Jake. It was almost, and he's done it for other pitchers. I get that, but it almost sounded desperate at some level that, he hadn't heard anything close to what he wanted to hear in terms of 6 or 7 years and $200 million. So now he's going to go to the owners and try to get them to loosen up the bank account a little bit. But you're right. They're both still out there. And, is Jake going to Seattle because, his wife's posting pictures of their vacation out there in the last few days. Is Milwaukee really a player? Because, Quintana was – they were supposedly sniffing around Quintana before the Cubs traded for him.
I'll tell you what really troubles me about Milwaukee, Brian, is it makes sense in a lot of ways. And they could keep their home here with $100 million. You can rent a second place up there. It's an easy ride. I mean, you're not uprooting. You're not. It's a really good negotiating piece to have in your pocket if you have any interest in being with the Cubs. And it also is a potential landing spot. I mean, Milwaukee led the division for 5 months. The Cubs just came and took it in the last month or two. It's not like they're that far away.
They may be ahead of schedule, but they don't have a lot of committed guaranteed money either. So if it's just about the money and ownership wants to make a statement type signing, not only for its fan base, but telling that, hey, Theo and Jed, we're coming for you. That's the obvious move.
You don't make business decisions for these reasons, but this, it would really concern me if I knew that not only was Arrieta getting away, but he was going to have 4 or 5 starts against me this year because he's in Milwaukee. That's not a good look. You don't want that at all.
312-644-6767 is the number, of course, unless he's a pitching version of Jason Hayward. Nick is on the Northwest side. Good morning, Nick.
Happy New Year, fellas. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for being patient. What's going on?
I know I'm probably the only guy in the city thinking this way, but would the Bears be better off if Fox stayed? And I'm going to go down the line here. You talk, Hub, about maybe 97% of a guy, maybe he's 100% of a guy if he gets a break. Didn't they play hard? Didn't everybody always say, hey, they played hard? Teams they beat, three of them could be playoff teams if Baltimore makes it in. I don't know. Is the continuity better next year having him stay, having him feel like, hey, they have faith in me, he's an experienced guy, or has the momentum train gone so far down the track there's no way you could bring this guy back? I mean, if they stood in front and said, we're bringing John Fox back, the outcry would be outrageous. But is it that unreasonable to think that they'd be better off leaving him than starting anew with, you know, are they going to go find the new Sean McVay out there? I mean, what do you guys think?
You know, thanks, Nick.
Yeah, Nick, we touched on this a little bit before. I can make several arguments for John Fox is not a bad football coach. He didn't suddenly become a bad football coach. And you know, again, you saw what he did in Denver, albeit with Peyton Manning. But the problem, Nick, is you can't bring him back without extending him. You can't bring him back in the last year of his contract, because while I can make an argument for John Fox being back, I cannot make any argument for letting Dowell Loggins run this offense for another year. And it's not just Dowell. You look at Zach Azani at wide receiver. They hired a guy who'd never coached in the NFL before, and you look at the problems you got at wide receiver. Jeremy Washburn was actually pretty well thought of and I think did a pretty good job with the offensive line this year. So I'm okay there. But for the most part, you've got to rebuild close to that entire offensive staff. And if Fox is in his last year of his deal,
who's coming in?
A top offensive coordinator prospect isn't going to take a chance on that job. So the answer, Nick, is if Ryan Pace has got big ones and he really wants to roll the dice, you extend John for a year or even two. You say, who's going to be our offensive coordinator? Fox convinces Pace he's got the guy. You could make that argument, and you know,
and
what?
Then here comes the backlash.
Well, people can scream all year long, but if you win your first three or four next year, and Mitch Trubisky looks like the future, that goes away quick.
He's Hub Arkish. This segment of the show brought to us by ADT. Home isn't just a place; it's the feeling of knowing you're safe. ADT, they let you take that feeling with you. Learn more at ADT.com. Talk some more football and interesting perspective there. That you just do what you feel is right. And I'm with you. An extension has to go with it, and that might be a bridge too far for Bears Nation. But, you know, if that's the route you go, you better be prepared to strap it down and wait for the backlash, and which could be also season ticket cancellation. So there's a price to pay with that.
Yeah, but they got a waiting list. I mean, that part they'll be okay with. There's a comp for this, and I can't remember who it was, but it was about 4 or 5 years ago where a veteran coach, like this, everybody thought he was gone. And stunningly, he got an extension and brought in a new staff. I can't remember who it was, though. And it wouldn't be the first time it's happened.
Well, and one of our texters, a longtime guy, Richmo, said, you know, Fox was brought in to stop the bleeding, not lead him to the promised land. If that's really what the expectation was in the building, you could argue that he in fact, made it more professional. And at least from a player's perspective, it's a professional locker room. It's whether the results show up on Sunday or not, it's certainly they go about their business in an NFL-type way versus what you saw with Trestman and Emery.
Well, and here's the other piece of this, Brian, is that, and we've gone back and forth on this, everybody in town has this perception that Fox, quote, wasn't Pace's guy originally. That's not completely true. There's a lot of semantics involved here. He wasn't his first choice. Now, I know that to be a fact. But he wasn't available when Pace was making up his list. Okay, he gets fired the day after Ryan Pace gets hired. There's no question that Ernie Accorsi and George McCaskey and Ted Phillips did some, I don't know if it was negotiating or convincing, but they did certainly suggest to Ryan that Fox was a good idea. That said, once Pace did his homework on Fox and came to some comfort with it, it was Ryan's decision. John Fox was not forced on him. But the fact that it originally wasn't his first choice probably plays into this a little bit, too.
He's Hub. You got Molly and Haley on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.